If I can leave one thing on your mind, it's this truth. If you don't get anything else, what will actually precipitate the return of the Lord is the proclaiming of the gospel of the kingdom to all nations. Because when he left, he said to his disciples, go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature, go and make disciples of all nations. He is not coming back till we've done it. Having spent 5.5 years in the British Army, I know about military orders. Orders are orders. And the first thing they tell you in the Army is ignorance of orders is no excuse for disobeying them. Can I say that to you? Ignorance of orders is no excuse for disobeying them. And then they said, once orders are given by an authority, they're in force until they're cancelled by someone with authority. Jesus is the authority. He gave those orders. He's never cancelled them. They are still in force. And he's not going to come back for a church that has failed to carry out his orders. I'd have to say for Ruth and myself, I think we can say honestly, this is what makes us tick. This is what we live for. This is what we dream about. This is what we think about. This is what we talk about. Proclaiming the good news of the kingdom in all nations. And I want to say this humbly to the glory of God. We have been enabled to do at least a part of that in at least 100 nations. By radio, by cassette, by books, and now by video. I tell you one thing, brothers and sisters, it won't happen by accident. It's going to take determination. I doubt whether a large majority of the church is going to do it. I think it's going to be done by a relatively small minority of totally committed people. Jesus said, go into all the world. Brother Andrew has commented on that. He said nothing about coming back. If we're prepared to go and not to come back, we can go to any nation. In that sense, there are no closed nations. I'm not saying we have to do that automatically, but it depends on the measure of commitment, doesn't it? Now, let's go on in Matthew 24. Very interesting. After verse 14, there's a complete change of perspective. Verse 14 has looked at all nations, the whole world. Verse 15, the perspective is on a very small area of the earth's surface, Judea. Essentially what is more or less the state of Israel today, but a little, state of Israel is a bit more than that. Incidentally, forgive me for saying, but the Bible doesn't call it the West Bank. Nor do the Jewish people. They call it Judea, still today. All right, now let's look, verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who's on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Let him who's in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. Now, when it speaks about the abomination of desolation in the holy place, I have to say to you frankly, I don't know exactly what that is. But I believe in the context, the holy place must be the temple area in Jerusalem. And whatever the abomination of the desolation may be, I'm inclined to believe it's some kind of idolatrous sign set up in that temple area proclaiming that the Antichrist is to be worshipped. It comes to the point where the Antichrist declares himself as God and demands the worship of the Jewish people. And they're going to be faced with a crisis because no Jew will voluntarily bow his knees to any human being. And in a certain sense, I think they're going to be faced with a decision, is the Antichrist the Messiah, or was Jesus the Messiah? And I think God is deliberately bringing them to the place of confrontation. Anyhow, Jesus says, whatever this sign is, when it appears, you've got to act without a moment's delay. And I mean, the urgency of this is frightening. He says that those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. It's not very clear what mountains they are. I'm inclined to think they'll be in the Negev, but that's my personal opinion. Let him who's on the housetop not come down to take anything out of the house. You know that in that part of the world, many of the houses have flat roofs, and they have outside staircases leading up to the roof. So Jesus says, if you're on the roof and you get this information, come straight down the staircase and go off. Don't go into the house to take anything. That's the measure of urgency. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. All right, you're working out in the field. You've left your coat behind somewhere. Don't turn back to get it. You won't have time. You've got to take off immediately. There is no way you can overemphasize the urgency of this statement. And then he says, woe to those who are pregnant and to those with nursing babies in those days. In other words, it's going to be a very tough time, and particularly tough for pregnant women and nursing women. And then he makes a statement which is very significant. He says, pray that your flight may not be in winter on the Sabbath. First of all, why would it not be good to flee on the Sabbath? Well, you see, I was in Palestine before it became Israel, under the British mandate. And it wouldn't have made any difference at that time whether you fled on the Sabbath or not. But since the Jewish state has been set up, the religious Jews demand special observance of the Sabbath, and most public transport doesn't run on the Sabbath, and any large group of people moving a distance on the Sabbath would immediately become conspicuous. Can you see what the implications of that? It assumes that at this time there will be a Jewish state again established in Judea. Otherwise, this prophecy would make no meaning. People say Jesus didn't predict the restoration of Israel. He did very clearly predict it. Here's one of the places. Now, let me point out something else to you. He tells them how to pray. I say them, but it could be us, since we live in Jerusalem. Pray that your flight may not be in winter on the Sabbath. Very important principle. Prophecy sets limits to what we can pray. It would be foolish to pray that we may not have to flee, because Jesus said we will have to flee. But he says you can pray that you won't have to flee in the winter or on the Sabbath. In other words, if you see the crisis coming and it's winter, you say, dear Lord, please hold it off till the fine weather. Or if you see the crisis coming and it's Friday afternoon, which is the eve of the Sabbath, say, Lord, hold it till Sunday. But you see, what I'm trying to emphasize is, if we're not familiar with prophecy, we can pray a lot of silly prayers. It's silly to pray that something will not happen which Jesus has said will happen. See that? I think a lot of Christians are praying for things that will never happen because Jesus has said they'll never happen. Or they are praying that things won't happen which Jesus has said will happen. That's a waste of time. Your prayer has got to be set within the boundaries of the revealed purpose of God. All right, let's go on. Verse 21, for then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time. No, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, the chosen ones, those days will be shortened. So at this point, there's going to be a period of the most intense agony and suffering ever recorded in human history. Nothing like it has ever taken place before. And when you think back to the Holocaust in 1939 and following, and reckon that 6 million Jews perished in the most horrible way, and that this is going to be worse than that, I would say it requires our careful attention. To me, so many Christians are like people who would have been in Britain in World War II if they were there on D-3 day and they didn't even know there was a war on. So much of our Christianity is so flippant and irrelevant to the realities of the situation. And one main reason is ignorance of biblical prophecy. Now, I'm not an alarmist, and I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist. I believe God is in control. I believe the best is going to come out of it. But it's silly not to bear in mind the fact that it's going to be tough. If Jesus says it's going to be tough, I think it'll be tough. Jesus said the situation will be so terrible that life on earth actually will be threatened. Statistically, there are enough nuclear weapons now in being in the world to destroy life 250 times. A few years ago, people scoffed at this remark and said, how could anything ever happen that would threaten all life? There's nothing to scoff about now. Now, I'm not saying that it'll be a nuclear war. I'm just saying at least it's scientifically, not merely possible, but most scientists think it's probable. Scientists are probably the people who are most alarmed. Christians are sleeping. Now, I believe this tribulation, this is my opinion, you can disagree with me and still go to heaven, but I believe this tribulation will be in two, shall I say, phases. The first phase will concern Israel, which is where this is set. But it won't stop there. Let's look at two statements about Israel. First of all, in Jeremiah chapter 30. Jeremiah 30, beginning at verse 3. This is a very clear prediction of the restoration of Israel to their land. There's only two alternatives. You either believe it or you don't believe it, but you cannot explain it away. Jeremiah 30, verse 3. For behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that I will bring back from captivity my people Israel and Judah, says the Lord. And I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. Now, anybody who knows even a little about the Bible knows which the land is that the Lord gave to Israel's fathers. There's only one land. It's the land of Canaan, or the Holy Land, or Israel. And God says, I will bring my people back, return them to the land, and they will possess it, regardless of what the United Nations says. I'm not much impressed by the United Nations. If I depended on the United Nations for my security, I would be an insecure person. All right, verse 4. Now listen, this is in reference to the return of Israel. I say this because a well-known charismatic Anglican minister, who happens to be a friend of mine, said recently the return of Israel to the land is not from God, because if it were from God, there would be peace. He just doesn't know his Bible, that's all. Which is true of some Anglicans. Would you agree to that? Lord, forgive me for saying that. But I'm an Anglican, so you have to. All right, are you ready? Verse 4. Now these are the words that the Lord spoke concerning Israel and Judah. For thus says the Lord, we have heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Does that sound like peace? Ask now and see whether a man is ever in labor with child. So why do I see every man with his hands on his loins like a woman in labor and all faces turn pale? Here is the birth pangs, you understand? It's so terrible that men are behaving like women in labor. Verse 7, alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. That's what Jesus said, there's never been one like it. And it is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. Never leave out that part. Now, when Jesus speaks in Matthew 24, I think he's talking about the time of Jacob's trouble. Then in Daniel, the 12th chapter of Daniel, verse 1 and following, about the same period, at that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. Now this is addressed to Daniel, so who are the sons of his people? The Jewish people, Israel, that's right. And notice Michael is the archangel charged with watching over Israel. So whenever Michael is in the forefront, you know that Israel is center stage, because that's his job. So Revelation chapter 12 where Michael is a main figure, tells you Israel is on the stage. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. Again, exactly what Jesus is saying. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. This is the first resurrection. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So in the midst of the darkness, it's possible for God's people to shine like stars. In Genesis 15, verse 5, you don't need to turn there, when God wanted to show Abraham what his descendants would be like, he took him out on a dark night, showed him the stars in the sky, and so shall your descendants be. And God gave this to me by revelation years ago. When the sun and the moon and the other lights are shining, you don't notice the stars. But when every other light has gone out, the stars shine brightest in the darkness. And Paul says, we are the descendants of Abraham through faith in Jesus Christ. So when every other light has gone out and the world is in darkness, God is expecting us to shine brighter than ever before. Going back now to Matthew 20, well, no, we'll look at something else. Let's turn to Romans. You keep your finger in Matthew 24. We'll be back then. Turn to Romans chapter 2. Romans, the second chapter. Romans 2, 9 and 10. Tribulation and anguish on every soul of man who does evil, of the Jew first and also of the Greek, the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace to everyone who works what is good, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So there's a divine order in the outworking of God's judgments and God's blessings. The order is to the Jew first, also to the Gentile. So when tribulation comes on Israel, that's a prelude to worldwide tribulation. Very important to remember that, even in the contemporary situation. The problems that hit Israel, which are numerous, are probably going to hit the rest of the world pretty soon. So don't sit back and say it doesn't concern us, because you may find it concerns you much more than you think. Terrorism essentially began against Israel. Now it's worldwide. That's just one example. So, though the tribulation will begin in Israel, it will spread to the whole world. And in Revelation 7, we have a reference to that. Revelation 7, verse 9 and 10. This is part of John's vision. After these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude which no one could number, of all nations, tribes, peoples, and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes, with palm branches in their hands, crying out with a loud voice, saying, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. And then one of the elders said to John, who are these arrayed in white robes, and where did they come from? And I said to him, sir, you know. So he said to me, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. So there is the great tribulation. It is now worldwide, all peoples, nations, tribes, and tongues, exactly as Jesus predicted. Now we must go on quickly. Verse 23 through 26 is another warning against deception. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Messiah, or there, do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Bear in mind, false prophets can show miracles. You do not believe a man is a true prophet merely because he shows miracles. There are satanic miracles. Then Jesus says, see, I've told you beforehand. Verse 26, therefore, if they say to you, look, he is in the desert, do not go out. Or look, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe it. Why? Because when he comes, it's going to be visible to the whole earth simultaneously, like lightning. There's not much secret about this, is there? The preparation is secret, the manifestation is very public. Verse 27, for as the lightning comes out of the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. It'll be like lightning. It'll straddle the earth in one moment. No question of having to go to some secret place to find him. You know the Jehovah's Witnesses teach that Jesus has come back. Did you know that? And he's in the 20th floor of some building in New York City. See? That's a typical example of deception. All right. Verse 28, for wherever the carcass is, there the vultures will be gathered together. How many of you have seen vultures? I suppose you don't see them in this country much, but in the Middle East, especially in Egypt, you see these, I get so interested in this, I've got to hurry up, but you see these birds up in the sky hovering, circling, coming lower and lower and lower. What do you know? You know there's something dying down below. So Jesus says, when you see all the vultures gathering around a certain place, you'll know something's dying. Well, I want to tell you, I believe that certain place is the land of Israel. And I would have to say we've got just about all the vultures there already. Every kind of error and deception and anti-Christian force is represented somewhere in that little nation. Now we must go on quickly. Verse 29, I want you to notice the first word, immediately. Did you hear that? Immediately. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. Then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Now, I want to point out to you that word immediately. Immediately after what? The tribulation. What will happen? The signs that immediately precede the return of Jesus will take place, and then he will be seen by all nations coming in power and glory. So what's the last major condition on earth before the visible return of Jesus? I didn't hear you. Tribulation. That's right. Vultures. Now listen. Some of you will understand why I say this and some won't. But if the church is going to be responsible for the condition on earth immediately prior to the return of Jesus, then the church is going to be responsible for the tribulation. I don't want to accept that responsibility personally. In other words, I don't believe the church is going to have the last say on the condition on earth before Jesus returns. I think many evil forces are going to move in and assert themselves. And we are not going to have to accept responsibility as the Church of Jesus Christ for the state of affairs immediately prior to the return of Jesus. Can you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you? You see, there is a teaching that the Church is going to take over the world and present it to Jesus. We're going to present to him a situation of tribulation, according to this. I'd rather not be responsible for that. Okay. Now, I trust I can say this charitably, but that kind of teaching arises out of a deliberate ignoring of biblical prophecy. And it's very dangerous. You remember the title that I gave to my previous message? Ignore it at your peril. This is not something to argue about or play about. It's something that's life and death. We need this light in a dark place.